is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here's what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
Despite the challenges, the WFP has managed to deliver food aid to more than 730,000 people in parts of the South and Northwest in the past month.
That's reporter Lisa Schlein on calls to get aid to civilians in Tigray. Details coming up. Also, there are new tensions between Morocco and Algeria, and 16 civilians are killed by suspected members of a militia group in eastern DRC. These stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The Ethiopian government accuses forces in Tigray of disrupting aid delivery to areas where 2.1 million people need life-saving food assistance. Ethiopia's National Disaster Risk Management Commission says trucks carrying food aid from Afar, Tigray's neighboring region, have been prevented from entering due to intense fighting. For VOA, Galmo Dawit has more from Addis Ababa.
The Ethiopian government accuses Tigray forces of expanding the conflict into the neighboring Afar region. This a regional state to be drawn into the conflict. Authorities say this has imperiled food aid to some of the 54,000 people who have fled their homes due to the fighting. Mithiku Kasa, Ethiopia's National Disaster Risk Management Commissioner, told the state-run Ethiopian agency that over 180 trucks transporting food aid for the people of Tigray are stuck at the border between Afar and Tigray. Kasa has blamed the Tigray People's Liberation Front, or the TPLF, for creating chaos and described the group as cruel for blocking aid. The fight with the Tigray forces expanded to Afar last weekend when fighters attacked residents at the border of Afar and Tigray, Afar regional authorities said. Ahmed Kreta is the Afar regional state communications office head. He says Tigray forces opened fire in Afar region Zone 4 district. Residents of the area were caught off guard, he says, and he accuses the TPLF of killing pastoralists in the area. He further accuses the forces for burning property and sexually assaulting women. He says Afar regional militia and local police known as Liu police are working to stop them. Ahmed says elderly women and children were victims of initial attack and accused the TPLF of continued fighting in the three areas of the Afar region's 4th district. He says there is ongoing fighting in the area called Yalo in the region's district 4. The Tigray forces have entered areas further such as Golina and Aura attacking civilians. Ahmed accuses the forces of burning down and looting town of Akar located at the border. He says fighting continues, but regional authorities are fighting back to push the forces out. As a result, 54,000 civilians have fled their homes. He says regional authorities are assessing the overall damage. Ahmed said the Afar region's militia and police are working with the federal forces to push out forces that are associated with the TPLF. Afar is the third region to become embroiled in the conflict since the war in Tigray region began in the November 2020. In the capital Addis Ababa, the government of Ethiopia organized a rally in support of federal forces. Residents carried banners that called for an end to what they termed as a foreign meddling in the internal matters. The mayor of the capital city, Adanecha Abebe, accused the TPL of using lobbyists to create negative portrayal of Ethiopia. She said the country's federal forces are sacrificing their lives defending their country. On Monday, Ethiopian Army Chief of Staff General Birhanu Juma, who hasn't been seen in public in recent weeks, said federal forces are on standby to act if necessary. He says if the TPLF want to achieve their goals through force, the National Defense Force is now more organized than it was when the war began. He said the army is armed and has experience. He added that the federal forces are just waiting for an order from the government. Colonel Getnet Adane, Ethiopian National Defense Force Public Relations Officer, told state media that the federal forces have taken appropriate measures against the Tigray forces in fighting along borders of Amhara and Afar region. However, Getachew Reda, TPLF spokesperson, says Tigray forces are making gains on both fronts. Getachew said the Ethiopian government has tried to send brigades of fighters to the regions to fight back, but they haven't been successful. Galmudait, VOA News, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia.
The World Food Program is renewing its appeal for unimpeded access to Ethiopia's northern province of Tigray, where an estimated 4 million people are suffering from acute hunger. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In a rare bit of good news, the World Food Program says the UN Humanitarian Air Service has transported 30 aid workers and urgently needed relief supplies for distribution across Tigray into Mekelle, the provincial capital. The plane, which arrived Thursday, is the first passenger flight into the region in nearly a month. Commercial flights to Tigray stopped June 23rd. That was several days before Ethiopian authorities declared a unilateral ceasefire after 8 months of deadly warfare. Tigray fighters quickly seized Mekelle and took control of the airport. WFP spokesman Thompson Feary says his agency, which manages the UN Humanitarian Air Service, plans to operate twice weekly scheduled flights. That, he says, will facilitate the regular movement of humanitarian personnel and light cargo into and out of Tigray.
Now, whilst this is positive news, we also have some not so positive news. The World Food Program is extremely concerned as the humanitarian response in the region continues to be challenged by a severe lack of sufficient food and other humanitarian supplies, limited communication services, and no commercial supply chain.
Despite the challenges, the WFP has managed to deliver food aid to more than 730,000 people in parts of the south and northwest in the past month. Feary says the WFP hopes to reach an additional 80,000 people in the northwest in coming days. While this is commendable, he says faster, free, and unimpeded access is needed to reach millions of Tigrayans with life-saving food. He notes a UN food security analysis in June projected more than 400,000 people would be suffering from catastrophic levels of hunger starting in July.
This is a conflict that is over 8 months old now. And people haven't harvested. The majority also failed to plant. They have no food left. Their grain stocks were looted. Others were displaced, some even multiple times. And they are in bad shape. And our teams are telling me that the situation is quite dire. You expect malnutrition rates to be quite high.
Feary says the WFP aims to assist 2.1 million people at risk in Tigray. In the meantime, he says another WFP-led convoy of over 200 trucks carrying food and other essential supplies is on standby in Samara, the capital of the neighboring Afar region. The WFP suspended aid deliveries along the Afar route after its convoy was attacked Sunday. Feary says the trucks are expected to depart for Tigray as soon as security is assured. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
New diplomatic tensions have surfaced between Algeria and Morocco, and Algeria decided to recall its ambassador in Rabat for consultations. The move comes after Morocco's United Nations envoy told members of the non-aligned nations group that Morocco supports an alleged right to self-determination of the Kabylie people, a Berber-speaking minority community in northeastern Algeria. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi discussed these developments with William Lawrence, a professor of political science at the American University in Washington. Professor Lawrence starts by saying he thinks Morocco's move is intended to be provocative.
It's purely a move designed to provoke Algerians. It's also a somewhat shrewd publicity stunt designed to assert a false equivalence between Moroccan annexation of the Western Sahara and the desire of the Sahrawis to resist this annexation, Western Sahara being an entire non-self-governing territory with an autonomy movement by Kabyles or Berber Amazigh-speaking community in the very heart of central Algeria who are looking for more autonomy and independence. The main reason why this is so completely unserious is Morocco has crushed a very similar movement for autonomy by the same ethnicity, the same Berber-speaking Amazigh people in its north over the last 5 years. And so it would be entirely hypocritical for Morocco to pursue the same policy for Algeria that it's crushing in the Moroccan north and with Morocco's attempt at false equivalency, crushing in the south. But if we mean by serious, does it have serious repercussions? The answer is yes. This is another in a long series of diplomatic dust-ups and confrontations between Morocco and Algeria, but have accelerated and gotten more serious since the December 2020 announcement by the Trump administration that the U.S. would become the first country in the world to recognize Morocco's claim to Western Sahara in exchange for Morocco's normalization with Israel. This caused Morocco to escalate its rhetoric in confrontations not only with Algeria, but with Spain, with Germany, and a number of other countries, calling them publicly, recalling ambassadors, because Morocco is feeling the wind at its back ever since the Trump administration's announcement and is seeking confrontations to try to force countries to follow the Trump administration's move.
But Algeria opposes any desire for independence in the Kabylie area, and the movement of self-determination of Kabylie was classified on May 18 by the Algerian authorities as a terrorist organization. Would the Moroccan move encourage the banned organization in Algeria to stir trouble for the Algerian government?
A little bit, because Algerian government already has a lot of problems. It's been seriously weakened by the Algerian Hirak movement since 2019, removed or forced out from power. The president for life, Bouteflika, and a lot of the corrupt people. One of Algeria's main goals in repression of the Hirak is the false assertion that the Hirak is largely a separatist pro-Amazigh or pro-Berber movement, which it is not. The Algerian government has been trying to characterize a lot of pro-democracy, anti-corruption movements in Algeria, like the large protests in 2001, 2003, 2011, as a separatist movement. And Morocco did the same in its north. So by doing this, Morocco is reinforcing Algerian government that the autonomy movement of the Kabyles is the main thing that's driving the current political turbulence. So it reinforces both Moroccan and Algerian government rhetoric and framing of local grievances without honoring or adequately addressing these local grievances. Morocco ironically doing the Algerian government a favor by backing it, framing and rhetoric and changing the subject in the direction that helps it. I've been down at the Moroccan-Algerian border when there seems to be almost like dueling jets in the air, you know, almost like the Russians and the Americans during the Cold War. It's a weird thing. Every time there's a diplomatic dust-up in New York or because the Algerian foreign minister said something in Moscow and the Moroccans get pissed off, suddenly the armies mobilize and the full-blown war never happens. But, you know, who knows if and when it will happen at some point.
That's William Lawrence, a professor of political science at the American University in Washington. He spoke with my colleague, Mohamed Al-Shanawi. 16 civilians have been killed by suspected members of an Islamist militia group in the Democratic Republic of Congo's eastern region. The French news agency AFP says the dead included 6 women and a child. They were returning from a weekly market yesterday evening when the ambush took place 40 kilometers from the city of Beni. The region is a hotbed of attacks by the Allied Democratic Forces, or ADF, which the U.S. says is linked to the Islamic State. DRC President Felix Tshisekedi has placed North Kivu and Ituri provinces under a state of siege and replaced senior civilian officials there with army and police officers. But critics complain the new measures have failed to curb the attacks. Zimbabwe continues to battle a surge in COVID-19 infections, an increase that's been exacerbated with the arrival of the Delta variant in the country. But some observers say that the country's efforts to contain the virus are being torpedoed by the government's policies. Arigando gives us more from Bulawayo.
This week, the Passenger Association of Zimbabwe, an organization that advocates on behalf of commuters, railed against the state-controlled Zimbabwe United Passenger Company, or ZUPCO, for not observing COVID-19 prevention protocols mandated by the World Health Organization. Critics say the failure to follow the measures puts the lives of millions at risk of infection. Observers say ZUPCO's unclean, packed, and poorly ventilated buses are not being disinfected. At the start of the COVID-19-induced pandemic in March of last year, the government issued a directive to compel public transport service providers to operate under ZUPCO, ostensibly to enforce rules to protect against the coronavirus. Private commuter transporters have all but been muscled out unless they come under the passenger company. But critics say that ZUPCO's failure to comply with World Health Organization COVID-19 requirements poses a threat to the lives of passengers. The government insists that it is following the health protocols. Investigations by VOA reveal that commuters endure long, arduous queues and packed buses, and authorities do not intervene to penalize the company when it fails to enforce COVID-19 regulations. As coronavirus numbers surge, critics say the situation cannot be abated unless the government liberalizes the transport sector to decongest public transport. Hardest hit and most at risk are workers. And the Zimbabwe Congress of Trade Unions Secretary General Peter Mtasa says the monopoly over public transport is not for the common good, but to line the pockets of the ruling elites and their cronies. In the meantime, he says the lives of millions of workers are at risk.
If you go to ZUPCO buses, bus stations, and if you see how packed the ZUPCO buses are when workers are going to work and going back home, you will realize that this is the biggest super spreader in the whole country. In ZUPCO buses, they are pegged like tinned beans. So this is where we have difficulties in understanding the government's interventions and its objectives. We think that the government must open up the public transport, allow as many people as possible to carry workers to and from work, so that we decongest the ZUPCO bus stations and ZUPCO buses.
Mtasa says the government needs to change its policies if it is serious about averting a public health disaster and to adhere to consistent and reasonable policies.
Unfortunately, the government is not listening to all the cries of workers, including the ZUPCO workers themselves. They are complaining that they are overworked, they lack protective clothing. Many are working long hours and using unroadworthy buses. They are not fit to be on the road. So we have a crisis, and unfortunately, the biggest pandemic currently is government policy in this country.
Meanwhile, the Bulawayo Progressive Residents Association concurs, confirming the view that the public commuter transport system is dangerous and serves the interests of just but a few. Association member Tembelani Duwe weighs in, saying the monopoly is stifling progress.
When the passengers are packed in those buses and combis, they do not observe social distancing. Because as far as we are concerned, as the residents are concerned, the ZUPCO monopoly has brought about congestion, especially during peak hours, which can lead to the spread of COVID-19, unlike in a situation whereby the residents will be having a choice in terms of transport. They won't be waiting for long hours as compared to what is happening now.
Observation by VOA reveals that it is not uncommon for commuters to queue up to 3 hours waiting for ZUPCO-affiliated vehicles to take them home. Little or no sanitation or screening takes place as commuters throng the vehicles. Social distancing is often not possible in the cramped buses. For most workers, the only choice is to rely on state-controlled buses or to look for a few pirate commuter transporters who try to elude the police.
Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo in Bulawayo, Zimbabwe.
The 2020 Summer Olympics formally opened a few hours ago, a year behind schedule. In a low-key ceremony, Japan's Emperor Naruhito declared the Tokyo Games open before fewer than 1,000 people. Only a limited number of dignitaries and sports officials were allowed into the new Olympic Stadium, built to hold more than 70,000 sports fans. A moment of silence was held to honor those who have died from COVID-19 over the past 18 months. The pandemic forced the year-long postponement of the Games in an effort to keep the Olympic from becoming a super spreader event. Fans are not allowed in competition venues, and athletes and officials must comply with restrictions on their movement. Some competitions were held yesterday, including early rounds of soccer. South Africa's football team got off to a disappointing start in the Olympics on Thursday, falling 1-0 to Japan. Events today included preliminary rounds in archery, table tennis, and rowing. Tomorrow's events will include badminton, shooting, and volleyball. Burkinabe triple jumper Hugh Fabrice Zango is among the athletes in Tokyo. In January, Zango set a world record to hop, skip, and jump more than 18 meters indoors. Zango stands a good chance of bringing home Burkina Faso's first Olympic medal. Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
No Burkinabe has ever won a medal at the Olympic Games. Young athletes like Khalid Sawadogo, though, practicing the triple jump here, are taking inspiration from a former member of the athletics club who looks set to do just that. Sawadogo is 23. He says that when you start athletics in Burkina Faso, you have the impression that you're at the bottom of the ladder. Zango, though, has shown by breaking the world record, jumping more than 18 metres, others can do it as well. Zango leaped into the record books in January, becoming the first person ever to jump more than 18 metres in an indoor triple jump. Optimism about his performance in Tokyo is running high. Speaking to Voice of America via Zoom just before he travelled to Tokyo, Zango said the pressure is mounting because of the expectations on him for the event. "We're arriving with a lot of ambitions to bring back Burkina Faso's medal," he says. "That's a positive thing. It proves that we can all accomplish great things." Burkina Faso is one of the least developed countries in the world. It's also in the middle of a conflict that has ravaged parts of the country, displacing more than 1.2 million people. Zango said on Twitter this month that winning the country's first medal could help build hope for the country's future. Zango's parents, meanwhile, say the secret to producing an Olympic medal contender is spotting talent early and nurturing it. Jacques Zango, his father, says, "We knew from his early school years he was someone who is curious, who likes to learn and who likes to push himself as far as possible." His mother, Felicite Zango, he always said that to be a good athlete, there are things he couldn't eat. She says she did what she could and helped him change his diet. Zango is also pursuing a PhD in electrical engineering at Artois University in France and fits his athletics career around his studies. Desire Sano, his high school coach, says his former student breaking the world record is already benefiting Burkinabe athletics, regardless of what happens in Tokyo. Sano says a lot of Burkinabe sportsmen can look up to Zango, but also many parents want their children to participate in athletics now. "This is a really positive thing for us," he adds. Sawadogo, for one, says Zango, has inspired him to aim for the Olympics. "It's the dream of every athlete to go to the Olympics," he says. "I'm aiming for 2024. I'm making it my personal goal." As Burkina Faso waits with bated breath to see if Zango brings home a medal, the triple jump final is scheduled for August 5th. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiye Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thank you again for tuning in and choosing the Voice of America.